Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site and fm1032.com.au.
You know, Os Guinness has this wonderful phrase. He says that the Western world lives off the cut flower of its Judeo-Christian heritage. Well, we've largely divorced ourselves from it, we've cut ourselves off from it, but we don't realise just how much we're actually living off it and living off its benefits. Well, I think that's what Alvin Schmidt would say too. He's the author of How Christianity Changed the World. He's been joining us over the last few weeks to explore this question of just what the world might look like if Jesus Christ had never been born. And he joins us again now, this time to talk about art and architecture. Alvin, welcome once more to Open House.
Thank you. My pleasure for being with you again.
It's really true, isn't it, that we do in the West kind of live off Christian capital, even though we don't realize it?
Yes, so many, many, many ways. And one reason we don't realize it is because it's not really mentioned in schools or in history books.
Why would it be written out of history?
Well, there are a number of reasons. One reason is because Christianity has often, for the last couple of hundred years, been unfairly maligned, and everybody picks up on that, I should say most people, and tend to think that Christianity was more of a detriment than anything else in society. And of course, when you look at the facts, the very opposite is true. It all began basically, you know, about 150 years ago. Before that, you know, you didn't find that kind of discussions or biases that were presented. And eventually people just echo those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the great works of art then that have been created by Christians. What are the first ones that jump to your mind?
Well, for example, most of us tend to think about Leonardo da Vinci's, you know, the Last Supper, but he painted a number of others that we don't commonly hear about. And there's Raphael, there's Rembrandt, for example, and there is, if you go farther back, Masaccio, who basically influenced Leonardo da Vinci. He's the first one who depicted the expulsion of Adam and Eve in the nude, and yet there is no sensuousness about that particular picture. He had, you know, unlike people today, when they see a nude body, it's sort of given to sensual experiences, not his art at all. And then you had others, Tintoretto, and the list goes on. People were edified by seeing those works of art in those days because many of them couldn't read. And so they often got the biblical message through the pictures that the artists painted.
One of the early forms of, church art, if you wanted to say that, is actually stained glass windows, isn't it?
Quite right. And it was Christians that basically brought into being colored mosaics. Mosaics and plain glass were available before, but the Christians began to use colored mosaics when they, and this particularly, again, took place as they built the Gothic cathedrals that began in the middle of the 12th century. And so they enhanced the art by giving it the color of life, so to speak.
Could it be said that there are any particular art forms that have been founded by the Christian faith? You talk about there the use of mosaics. Any others like that?
Yes, particularly the Gothic architecture. If there's any architecture that's distinctively Christian, it is the Gothic. And when you see those Gothic cathedrals in Europe, whether it's in France or Italy or Germany or England, they are indeed impressive. Previous to the Gothic architecture of the middle of the 12th century, you had the Romanesque, and before you that, you had even the Roman basilicas. They were basically buildings that had a flat roof, still the pagan design that man was valuable, and you looked at the world horizontally, but with the Gothics, it now became vertical. You look to the heavens. In other words, no longer to man, but you look to God, in a sense, if you will. And the Gothic architecture basically had a number of outstanding features. They were physically aesthetic. There were no two ever totally alike. And they took decades, sometimes more than a century, to build. They were adorned with biblically based art, statues, frescoes, and sometimes engravings. And they towered above everything else in a city or town that you could see from miles away. And their bells regulated the town's activities, and their stained glass windows added to the overall grandeur. And as some art historians have said, one had to be spiritually obtuse not to be uplifted. And I know when you go to these cathedrals and look inside and look to the vaulted ceilings of the architecture, which were made possible by the flying buttresses, so to speak, and the light shining through the ceilings and other portions of the building, it just gives you sort of a foretaste of heaven.
Mm. That's right. It's very interesting that most of us don't realize that the steeple is actually there as a device to point us up to the sky, to point us to heaven.
On the steeple is always invariably a cross.
Mm, that's right. Again, pointing us up to the cross as well. And also, like you mentioned there, when you go into a cathedral, it's almost a sense of a transcendence that you can pick up too, because of often the very high ceilings.
That's quite right, and it really does. And I've seen people in Europe in the different cathedrals, and I've been in many of them. Even some people who sometimes you can overhear them saying, well, I don't really believe in God, but when they get inside, I don't want to use the word mesmerized, but they almost are, well, they're awestruck, shall I put it that way.
Mm, absolutely. And art and architecture have often come together in history and as influenced from the Christian faith when we think of something like the Sistine Chapel.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, the artwork of Michelangelo, for example, with David and Moses, the carvings, you know, that he did, which are classics to this very day.
Now, what really motivated some of these artists like Rembrandt and Raphael and Da Vinci? Some would say, okay, they actually depicted Christian scenes and biblical imagery and things because, well, that's who was paying the bills. It was the church that was paying the bills. What's your response to that?
Well, I think it would be oversimplified to say that what motivated them was the gospel of Jesus Christ. In many cases, they didn't get a great deal of money. Sometimes none at all, really. And, you know, most artists in those days were not wealthy people, unlike today when we support them in television in terms of advertising and the like. That was not true. They really, I think you have to say, did it to the glory of God. And when you read their particular writings, it's very, very evident that was at the bottom of their motivation.
Mm. And what were they trying to do? Were they trying to open our eyes up to heavenly realities, or trying to show us earthly realities in a heavenly light, or what?
I think the latter is a good way of putting it. They knew we're earthly creatures, but they also had a strong faith that life here on earth, when you're dead, it's not all over.
Mm.
There is a future and a resurrection. And hence, you know, they depicted a lot of that art around that particular theme.
You know, one of the big questions that I've been throwing to you each week, Alvin, has been, you know, what would the world look like if Jesus hadn't been born? And again, the question I put to you, and I know it's always been a hard one every week, what could art have actually become if Jesus had never actually entered the world? Do we know much about pagan art, and do we know much about Roman art or whatever the other influences of Western culture, and where we might be now?
Yeah, well, if you look, for example, at the classical Greek era, before the birth of Christ, from about the 4th, 5th century to the birth of Christ, art was basically man-centered. Everything revolved around the human being. And it basically captured the old Greek saying that man was the measure of all things. Christian art radically departed from that. Christian artists did not see man being the measure of all things, but God the measure of all things, and that man was to glorify God. Francis Schaeffer, been dead for some time, said that, for example, art, particularly during the Reformation era, was not an aesthetic value divorced from the consideration of truth and religious significance. Kurt Vonnegut, I think, who died only a couple of months ago, art was that which was supposed to lift the soul, not depress it, for example, as you have in various forms of modern art, whether it's surrealism or whatever it might be. That you see very clearly depicted. They came to it with an entirely different motive, namely to glorify God.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the theme of the Bible.
Yeah, and I think maybe that essential pivotal point of Jesus' incarnation, his visitation to the world in bodily form, in many ways could actually be almost the modus operandi of any artist. I remember hearing a wonderful definition of art, and the definition went something like, great art makes the invisible visible.
Right.
That's what Jesus did. He actually made the invisible one true God visible by being the...
Yeah, and you know, you might say that when God, in the person of Jesus Christ, touched the earth in human flesh, you would think that things would happen, and they did. It influenced hundreds and thousands of Christians to see the world in entirely different light.
More than fascinating every week to catch up with you, Alvin. Thanks so much again for your time.
Well, my pleasure to be with you again. Thank you.
That's Alvin J. Schmidt. He's a sociologist and a historian. He's a Lutheran pastor as well and author of How Christianity Changed the World.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.